Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. It should be a good one.
Thanks for having me, Steven.
Double X, anytime, man.
Christopher Mad Dog Russo here. You are listening to Steven Strom on TalkNorth.com.
Always passionate, always fiery. You're listening to the Strom Sports Show. Take it away, Steven.
Great to have you in here. TalkNorth.com, Steven Strom here, Strom Sports Show. Happy Friday, the 14th day of January, 10 days until my birthday, 24 years old. Oh, my God, can't believe it. Great to have everyone in here. We have Eric Reed, the play-by-play broadcaster for the Miami Heat. He's been there for 34 seasons. We get into a great conversation about his career, how he got down to Miami. He's a New York guy, so a little connection there. And just kind of the sliding door moments in a broadcasting career. We touch up a little bit on Eric Spoelstra and the job that he's done, how the Heat have sustained success with multiple lineups. So it's a great conversation with, you know, an outstanding broadcaster, but also a guy that has great perspective on life. So Eric Reed will join us in just a few minutes here. Lot of sports this weekend. We've got Wild Card Weekend. We got NFL playoffs. We're in the thick of things with the NBA. The NHL is back. We got college basketball. So there's a lot of great stuff going on. And as the recent news came out this week for the Minnesota Vikings, Mike Zimmer, Rick Spielman, they're out, which means we're going to get some new guys or women in the organization. We don't know how that's going to unfold, but I did have some takes. I did have a guy in mind, maybe an unlikely mind, maybe someone that you don't love, a college guy that I think could immediately electrify this franchise. Now, I've gotten a lot of pushback on it. I've gotten the, no, he's a college coach. No, he already had a stint. Yes, those two things may be true. Folks, I want Lane Kiffin. And don't turn it off. Do not turn this thing off. I really think that Lane Kiffin makes sense with the Minnesota Vikings. Now, we know the Wolves plan on bringing in a GM before a head coach. That will be pretty telling if this can be legitimate or not. Because as soon as he brings a GM in, you're going to kind of get a feel for, okay, who are we looking at? The general vicinity of where we're looking at. There has been some buzz around Lane Kiffin and the Minnesota Vikings. We've heard some stories. Mike Ryan on Levitard, he came out and said that the Wolves and Lane Kiffin possibly were meeting up in the Bahamas. We know Lane Kiffin had a stint down here in Florida at FAU. The Wolves have a house down here. So there was some reports that they were meeting. So let's break down Kiffin to the Vikings. Just, we'll be honest here, and I'll be honest. Here is what Lane Kiffin is up against. And here's the negative, and it's all real. Number one, you got to go back to his Raiders days, 5-16 overall record. Now, he was the youngest coach in Raiders history, 1 year younger than John Madden. Here's what happened with the Raiders. The Raiders had a number one overall pick. He did not want Jamarcus Russell. Al Davis wanted Jamarcus Russell. So we know how that goes. The Raiders take Russell. He's an absolute, a disaster with the franchise. Doesn't take his job serious. Out of shape. You couldn't ask for a word. I'm telling you, if you had to start as a head coach, if there was one guy that you didn't want as your quarterback, it probably was Jamarcus Russell, the way it all unfolded. So Lane Kiffin is up against the obvious. He's been in the NFL, didn't do well, got fired in his second year. He was done. The second thing that is going up against Lane Kiffin is, I think, the recency of Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer is a prime example of a guy that is a college coach, that is a guy that can only get along with college players. You can't talk the same way to an 18-year-old kid versus a 31-year-old man. You just can't. You can't have the same culture as you would with an 18, 19-year-old kid versus a 31, 32-year-old man. It just doesn't work like that. And for Urban Meyer, it was an absolute, that was another disaster in Jacksonville. There was scandal. There was things that happened in between the locker room, between players, James Robinson, you had the kicker. You know, there was about, it couldn't have gotten worse for Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that's number one. That's what Lane Kiffin is up against, is the obvious, the Raiders days, and then the Urban Meyer. Number two, what you can rationalize about college to the NFL, and here's some guys that have had success. Jim Harbaugh, who possibly could be going back in the NFL with the Miami Dolphins job out. Brian Flores is out. Stephen Ross, very close with Jim Harbaugh, loves him. He could possibly come back. He went Stanford, 49ers, got to a Super Bowl, back to Michigan. Jimmy Johnson, obviously, down here, Miami, to the Cowboys. Pete Carroll, USC, Tom Coughlin. So there has been guys. Now, those are great names I just mentioned, and I'm sure you can name me a list of coaches that didn't work out. But there is a path to having success from college to the NFL. Let's just get into the positives to Lane Kiffin going to Minnesota. Number one, schematic offensive wizard. I think people have this idea about Lane Kiffin and his offense about throw, throw, throw. It's really not. He likes to run the ball. The Vikings have a tremendous running back in Dalvin Cook. I think that Cook would be rejuvenated. I think that he would really eat up an RPO offense. I think that the zone blocking scheme, it's a boring, vanilla offense. I think that Lane Kiffin can come in here and spice it up. And again, there's this misconception about his offense that doesn't like to run. He does. You know, Matt Corral, the second in Heisman voting, only threw 20 touchdowns this year. Usually, you know, guys are throwing 40, 50 touchdowns. You had Dwayne Haskins throw 60 touchdowns in a year. So I think the fit, not only the Vikings need a little kicker-upper on offense, but also their skill position players. In Dalvin Cook, he would be utilized. Justin Jefferson, he would be utilized. And then I think it's almost like a 1-2 punch with Kiffin and Corral. And it, to me, it's the idea of drafting Matt Corral. That's another positive to this. He's projected to go between 10, 11, and 12. The Vikings are in between one of those picks. I think that if the Vikings take a shot, and this would be so much more plausible if they didn't draft Kellen Mond, which has been a disaster. Matt Corral is mobile. He's a modern quarterback. He's accurate. He's poised. And you know what? He's got some swagger to him, which the Vikings need. I like Kirk Cousins. He puts up great numbers. I don't think a lot of guys gravitate towards him. And I think everyone would say that. I think getting a younger guy, Matt Corral, swag, got the coach, Lane Kiffin, that you worked with in college, I think he can win over a locker room. I think guys would want to play with him. And the number one most important thing about Lane Kiffin that I will always say about him, this is his number one quality, he is aware of who he's working with, and he isn't attached to one scheme or another. He is not one of those coaches that says, oh, you don't work in my scheme, see you later. No, you get skilled position players, you get the best athletes. Okay, you're better in this set, you're better on this side of the field, you like running this way, you like tackling over here, here's how we're going to use you, just like that. And that's what I really like about him. He's going to look at Justin Jefferson and he's going to say, there is not any reason why you shouldn't have 15 to 20 targets every game. He's going to look at Dalvin Cook and say, we don't have to run you 30 times for you to be effective. We can run you 15 and then we can line you up maybe as a wide receiver. Maybe we'll put you and Justin Jefferson next to each other. That's what I like about Lane Kiffin, is that he's aware of who he's working with and isn't going to be attached to one scheme or system. I'm telling you, I'm selling you on Lane Kiffin. I think it would be great. Because here's what I don't want. I don't want a Jim Caldwell. I don't want a Vic Fangio. I don't want one of these older dinosaurs. I'm done with that. Like, Zimmer was like the last one in the NFL that was doing that. I don't want that. I don't want that for my team. I want young. I want analytics to an extent. I want a coach that looks at Justin Jefferson and says 20 targets. I want a coach that looks at Dalvin Cook and says, we can use you in so many different ways instead of handing the ball off to you 30 times. The offensive talent is there. The right coach hasn't. Now, what Lane Kiffin is going to have to do, if this is actually serious, he's going to have to come in here and do a couple things. Number one, because I'm not worried about him offensively, he's got to get a defensive coordinator, which we've seen younger coaches do. Sean McVay hiring Wade Phillips. Can you imagine Wade Phillips and Lane Kiffin? That is electric. He needs to come in here, get a veteran defensive coordinator that you can trust. He needs to fix his approach as far as his communication with players. He has to come in here and understand that this isn't guys that are 18, 19, 20 years old. These are grown men. How are you going to interact? How are you going to gain their respect? How are you going to talk to them as an equal? Because you have to do that at the professional level. Those are the two concerns that I would have with Lane Kiffin coming to Minnesota. Who's going to coach the defense? Are you able to get along with players? That's it. I don't want Jim Caldwell. I don't want Vic Fangio. I don't want Eric Bieniemy. And that might sound crazy. Guys that play or coach, guys like Patrick Mahomes, Tariq Hill, Travis Kelce, I mean, it makes you think, you know, what are those guys without those players? And I think a lot of times you get these offensive coordinators that play with these great players and they get plucked. All of a sudden, you're not working with Patrick Mahomes. You're working with Kellen Mond. Make it work. Doesn't always work like that. So I just wanted to lay out my case for Lane Kiffin. Do I think it's honestly going to happen? No. But do I think that this would actually make sense for this Viking team? Yes. I don't think they're going to have the guts to pull the trigger, though. Really quickly, and we'll get to Eric Reed, want to do some wild card stuff. Just make my predictions. I love the Buffalo Bills this weekend, -3.5. I love them. I think that's my bet of the week. I think that Cincinnati takes care of Vegas. I think the spread is a little bit too high. 6 is a lot. I would probably take Raiders with the points. And then I would take the Bucks -8 at home. Sleeper, 49ers against the Cowboys. I know not a lot of people want to believe that, but I think that's a sleeper pick. If the 49ers are able to run the ball, control the clock, keep the ball at Dak Prescott's hands, watch out. I would take the over in that game at 50. And I guess I'll take the Cowboys to win, but I might take the 49ers with the points. It's going to be a close game. The Chiefs are going to absolutely annihilate Pittsburgh. That 13 should be 28 because it's going to be that bad. And then you've got the Rams and Cardinals. I don't know how you can pick the Rams right now the way that Matt Stafford's playing. Cardinals are better on the road. I like the Cardinals in this spot. Given 4 points, I'd probably take them to win the game. So those are my predictions. Those are my wild card predictions. Should be a really interesting weekend. A lot of football, a lot of great, great entertainment this weekend. Let's get to Eric Reed here with our conversation on his career, how he got to Miami, the sliding door moments in broadcasting, Eric Spoelstra, and much more. Stick with us here. Eric Reed's up next here on the Strom Sports Show. All right, Eric Reed is the lone remaining original member of the Miami Heat broadcasting team, and he's in his 32nd season of calling Heat basketball. He's won 17 regional Emmy Awards. He's a winner of the Florida Sportscaster of the Year. The accolades go on and on. And he joins us now on the Strom Sports Show. Eric Steven Strom here. It's great to see you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Steven. And I hate to start with it with a correction, but 34th year. I don't want to get cheated out of 2 years nor the franchise history. So
that was on the website. I mean, that's, I don't know. I know what? 88, you know, yeah, I should have known that.
Yeah, well, whatever. No, that's something needs updating. But there you go. All right. 34 years in, like, and what a story it's turned out for the franchise, you know, from an expansion team in 1988. To now sitting here as a three-time championship winning organization. Mm. And as we speak, a championship contending organization right now.
Yes, they are. And we'll get into a lot of that again. 34th season, my bad here, Eric Reed with us. Let's start here. I want to go broadcasting into a little bit of the Heat. We'll dabble on both topics. So it's funny how the hierarchy has changed in sportscasting because you started as a color analyst in 1988, and that's typically now the ex-player position. So my first question to you is, how did you or how differently did you prepare as a color analyst compared to a play-by-play broadcaster today?
Great question. I came to Miami as a play-by-play broadcaster. I had done 11 years of college basketball, 5 at Cornell University and 6 doing the radio for Providence College, which was highlighted by Providence's 1987 Final Four team with Rick Pitino. Billy Donovan was the star player. But when I interviewed with the Heat, it was as to be their radio play-by-play guy. But a plan was laid out to me on that first meeting with Louis Chaffel that he said, if I can get a simulcaster to do our games on both radio and TV, we'd like to do that and you'd be the color guy. And I'm thinking to myself, how could that possibly work? Because back then the color guys were ex-coaches and players as well.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to try to keep it as brief as I can, but I left that interview like fingers crossed that they would not find. There were only about 4 teams in the league back then that did simulcast.
Sure.
It was both radio and TV together. So I figured, well, what are the odds he's going to find somebody to do that? And so I go back to my home in Providence, Rhode Island. It was pre-laptops, pre-computers. I got a subscription to the Miami Herald that would arrive at my house in Providence one day late. And that's how I followed the Miami Heat organization between a year and 6 months before the Heat officially began as an NBA sure. organization. And I'll never forget it. One time it was, you know, I followed the NBA draft like that when the Heat took Ronnie Cicely with the first ever draft pick of the Heat. And then one day I opened up the newspaper and it said, Heat hires Sam Smith to do play-by-play on the team's simulcast. And I remember closing the newspaper, calling up my boss in Boston. I was working for the New England Sports Network at the time. And I said, hey, you know, I was doing Red Sox pre-games or post-games back then and Boston College football for NESN. And I said, hey, I didn't get the Heat job. I'm back, you know, because they knew that I was pursuing the Heat job.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't until, you know, and the idea of me doing color was approached in my initial interview, but I just really never paid it that much attention. So when the play-by-play job went the other way, I did too. And I'm like two, three games into my Boston College football season already, and my phone rings on a September night, you know, middle of September, and it was the Heat saying, we still want to offer you that color job. You need to come down here and interview with Sports Channel Florida. They got some play-by-play opportunities for you. The next day I was on a plane and met with a guy named Jeff Genthner, who is the general manager of Sports Channel Florida. He laid out, you know, a plan that I could do University of Miami football. Mm-hmm. It was a tape delayed package, but they would play by play and about 15 to 18 University of South Florida games on TV. It was part of their Sun Belt contract.
Yep.
And that gave me the leap of what I needed to make my leap of faith. I knew I would have those 16 USF games and 10 University of Miami football games.
Yep.
And I'd still be doing play by play, but most importantly, I get my foot in the door with an NBA organization. Thanks to Ron Ross. I ended up taking that job like a week before the Heat's first training camp began.
Mm-hmm.
A week before.
That's
and
insane.
The next thing you know, I'm down in Miami and going to the University of Miami for the Heat's very first training camp. And I did color on a simulcast for those first 3 years. So it was like doing radio on TV.
Yeah. Can you explain to the audience real quick what it's like? Cause not everyone knows what simulcasting means if you're not into broadcast, just real quick.
Simulcasting is when a team does TV and radio in the same broadcast. So it's too much talking for TV. It's probably not enough for radio.
Yeah.
And that's why the simulcast has faded away in the league. One team currently does it.
Magic.
Orlando Magic. But it's a vanished art and probably for good reason. I got to do my first year doing play-by-play for the Heat was year four of the franchise, the final year of the simulcast, the first year the Heat went to the playoffs. I teamed with Dave Wohl that year as the broadcast team. I loved the season. I got to do play-by-play on a simulcast, which gave me my final opportunity to do radio. I haven't done radio since year five. I've been TV only. But it was a great year. Probably the only time we were ever eliminated from the playoffs that it didn't feel bad. Think about that. Only time in the playoffs eliminated and it didn't feel bad because it was the first trip. It was against Michael Jordan's Bulls. The first playoff game at Miami Arena, first home playoff game for the franchise, took a 31-19 lead after one quarter. And then Michael Jordan scored 54 of his 56 and the Bulls went on to sweep us. But we knew it was our first taste and we knew we'd be back.
Yep.
This frequently and this deep. Nobody could have anticipated the success that awaited us. But trust me, it was a long way to get there to the great Pat Riley years. And now right up into this great current season, the Heat's enjoying.
Eric Reed with us now. What a fantastic story. That's why I like to ask the question, just because it's fun, like everyone that's trying to get to the same, everyone's getting to the same mountain, but we all take different kind of approaches and we have these kind of full circle moments. We have these sliding door moments, like you're thinking that you're staying in Boston. So thank you for being transparent and vulnerable and sharing that. Number one. Number two, we'll get into my second question. And I feel like the best play-by-play broadcasters have the ability to inform and entertain. And I feel like you do both of these. What do you think, or what do you feel makes a great play-by-play broadcaster in basketball specifically?
Wow. That's a really, I don't know if I've ever been asked that question that way. I don't know. It's many things to many people in the industry. You know, it's funny. I build my work habits. Like I'm a real prepared guy for each game.
Yeah.
But the longer I've done it, the more I understand the preparation is one little building block. I think you got to be diligent in how you prepare and more careful on how you use it. It's fine to not use most of the stuff I have on my board for each game. I don't use.
You don't want
to
force it.
That's right. A force is a force, whether you're the producer of that game or you're the play-by-play or the color guy. I always say, you know, that the game is really my boss. The game tells me what to talk about. Mm. And that's what's kept the job for me so fresh over 34 seasons. You know, every night it's something different. And how I judge myself is based not on how I prepare for the game. That's a constant and a given. It's how I call the game and describe the game that's happening right before
and react
balls, and how you respond to that. And that's what's so enjoyable about the job. You can plan certain things. You can plan out your open. That's about it. And you better be ready to, you know, it's a great life lesson because you can have your plan and then you better be ready to change your plan as the game changes by the minute. So it's exciting. Every game is exhilarating and entertaining. And especially when you have a team like the one we're being treated to this year with the Miami Heat.
All right. I got a couple more left. I asked Ray to 10 minutes. We're already at 6:10. So I want to squeeze in a couple more with you. Let's talk some Heat now. This team is 25-15. They're third in the East. They've been without Bam Adebayo here for, it feels like 2 months. Maybe it is 2 months. Jimmy Butler has been in and out of the lineup. They've dealt with the health and safety protocols as every team has. But what Eric Spoelstra has been able to do with developing, with juggling different lineups, putting guys like Max Strus, Omer Yurtseven, Caleb Martin in the right situation has been absolutely incredible to watch. What is it about Spo that he's been able to sustain success with these lineups and any form of lineup?
It says a lot about him as a coach and about him and his staff. And it says a lot about the talent that is playing for Miami right now. I've come up with a term this year that I've never used before in my, you know, this going on 34 seasons. You know, I've called a lot of these shorthanded wins over the last month, this magical time that Spo has been referring to as, you know, I'm calling these organizational wins. They're organizational victories. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a season where Spo's brilliance and the Heat's culture have been illuminated as much as they have been this year. It's like this convergence of respect for a coach that never gives a team an exit ramp or an excuse. We have enough, we have enough. And that mentality, you know, pervades and persuades, and he gives confidence to guys, and he's coaching the right guys. That's where the organization is in such sync. They have an ability to discover talent that has gone undrafted. I mean, their roster is loaded, not littered, loaded with talented undrafted players. So this, you know, finding a guy is only half of it. Then you bring him in, and between the coaching and the mentorship they get in Miami, you see the results year after year, player after player. Right now it's Max Strus and Gabe Vincent. You know, at the beginning of this season, you know, one of the accurate concerns regarding this team, and I had them as well, was the team deep enough?
Right.
You were basically handing the reins to Strus and Vincent right from the beginning of the season as rotation players. I thought the first half of the season was going to determine whether they were up to that or not. Well, they've proven they're more than up to it. Yurtseven as a third center, Caleb Martin as a two-way contract. I mean, the stories have been endless. The storylines have been bountiful. They've been great stories to tell. Heroes emergence to go 10-4 in games without Butler and Bam. Think about that. Your two best players.
No other team is doing that, Eric, in this league. No other team is doing that in this league.
The other thing that jumps out at me is 8-2 against the top six teams in the NBA. So the crazy thing, it's been great. Been a great first half of the season. Yet the second half is so important.
Yep.
As guys come back, the eventual return of Victor Oladipo. Eric Spoelstra, who's done probably the best coaching job of his life, he's going to have to keep on doing that.
I know. Yep.
It's not going to be easy. You know, as he puts it back together, you know, there's probably going to be some subtle and maybe not so subtle differences.
Yep.
You know, Strus and Yurtseven, will they weather the long haul as being key players? Right now they are. And, you know, as the season evolves one day at a time. But it's been, for me, as enjoyable a first half of season as I could remember. I don't know if it's just the fact that you understand how blessed you are to enjoy these seasons and the kind of team and the kind of season that you think we may be right in the middle of right now.
Well, number one, I took this job in September, and I'm from New Jersey, and my dad is from Minnesota, so I'm a Timberwolves fan. So this winning thing is very new to me. So it's been a great brand of basketball to watch. And I think one of the other things is, you know, this is a relatively new team that they put together, right? Like PJ Tucker, Kyle Lowry, Markieff Morris, like these are different pieces that typically it takes time for these guys to gel. And the fact that they've had so much success is just a credit to not only the players, the coaching staff, but just the overall organization to feel confident in putting those pieces together as we kind of, you know, go into this year. But I think halfway through this point, the MVP in my, opinion has been Kyle Lowry, and you can't really number watch with him to understand his impact. It's just kind of him organizing the offense. It's getting guys going. It's him taking charges. What has impressed you most about Kyle Lowry?
Everything. Everything. And I'm not surprised by any of it. It's funny. In my position, I'm always wanting the Heat to win, but trust me, I am watching the other team every single night, and, have there are players that you come to really get to know a little bit and respect a lot.
Yeah.
And two of the guys around the league, I respected so much. And the Heat had so many, both regular season and postseason battles with Toronto's backcourt of Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, and I'm enjoying the season that both of those guys are having. I really am. I know Billy Donovan really well. He was the point guard on the Providence team that took me to a Final Four in '87. Now he's one of the best ever college coaches, championship level college coach, elite college coach that transitions so well to the NBA. Bigger names have tried and failed. He's flourishing. So to see Billy doing it with the way he's doing it and the way DeRozan is playing this year, first team all NBA, first half. And Kyle Lowry, listen, there's the value of the veteran point guard. You saw it last year with Chris Paul, what he did for the Suns. You're seeing it every night with Kyle Lowry. There's very few of these kind of players around ever, and right now for sure. But what a difference it makes. Like every NBA, every NFL team, what do they all want? A quarterback. They call it a point guard in the NBA. It's a quarterback and a guy that organizes and inspires and communicates and assists and sets up. He sets screens. He's the tip of the spear defensively. It's not just the charges he's drawn. Look at all the big guys he has tussled and wrestled with.
So versatile defensively.
He's the best point guard. I've said this from the minute he got here. He's the best point guard the Heat has had. No offense, Goran Dragic. No offense, Mario Chalmers. The best point guard that I think the Heat has had since Tim Hardaway stopped playing in 2000. They're so valuable. And I love watching the point guard like Kyle Lowry, a guy, Jimmy Butler does it too.
Yeah.
Star caliber player that can evaluate the game as it's going on and do what's needed to help his team win. And I think that's what Kyle and Jimmy are so unique at. It's the thing that they really have in common, besides being just tough, courageous, competitive, winning guys. It's really, really cool to have both of them together. And the hope is, hey, get everybody back. Stay healthy. We got 8 of the next 9 coming up at home. I think 11 home games in March. It is a runway to what really matters, and that's the playoffs.
And that's the key. Get everyone healthy. You mentioned Hero as well, and a big part of his game as well, I thought, has been Kyle Lowry and getting him going. And again, we just talked about Lowry, but I want to get to the last one because we went over here, and I appreciate you giving me time. The last thing I want to ask you, Eric, when it's all said and done as far as your broadcasting career and you hang up the mic, which we don't want you to do anytime soon, what do you want Heat fans to be able to tell others when they ask, hey, who is this Eric Reed guy? What was he like? What kind of broadcaster was he?
Oh boy, I'd love to save that for another day, but you asked it today, so
it could be a short answer. Again,
listen, I don't know. Love the Heat, love the game, respected every fan that tuned in, respected every game player, all of those things, and somebody that they enjoyed the games with. It's funny. I know when we do games, we're speaking to the fans that just started, and we're also speaking to that unique group that was with us as an organization from the start.
Yep.
And I guess that's where the uniqueness of being there from the start, it comes in so often, no matter who I'm sharing the games with. And right now it's great to share them with John Crotty. It's a special experience to share Heat basketball with the fan base. We never take it for granted. We come ready to enjoy every game, with the fans. And as you said, we try to inform, a little bit of entertainment sprinkled in, and just have a great time with the fan base, watching what has been, you know, a unique and extraordinary product. And I'm proud that, that I've been there for the whole journey, because those expansion years and having Ron Rothstein on the telecast, I mean, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Like, yep.
You know, we're getting ready for the Atlanta game tomorrow. And I looked, I'm doing my research and like preparation, it could be one sentence in a game, or maybe I don't even get it in. So here's one I may or may not get in. The Heat's first ever win against the Hawks was the first time we ever played the Hawks. So I have a little memory from that game. The Hawks had Dominique Wilkins, Moses Malone, and Doc Rivers. And the Heat got a 30-10 game from Grant Long. And it was the seventh win of Ron Rothstein's first year. Come on, man. We only had 15 wins that year. Like, I'm imploring Rothstein.
You're going to remember
all 15 of the wins, okay? And what he doesn't remember, that's my job, to fill in the blanks for the coach. But I hope we get a chance to rekindle one of his 15 wins with him, during tomorrow night's telecast.
Eric, thank you so much for joining me. This was a fantastic spot. I can't thank you enough for joining me. I'll see you in the office. I'll come up to you, and I'll definitely say what's up. And again, keep up the great work. You and John do a fantastic job. Thanks again for jumping on.
Enjoyed spending the time with you. Thank you, and I look forward to meeting you.
And a very big thanks to Eric Reed for joining us today. Have a fantastic rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you next week on the Strom Sports Show. Make sure to check out all the other podcast on the network. We have a new Gopher show. Check that out. I saw Spencer Tolickson and head coach Ben Johnson, who I already had on the pod last year. Make sure to check all of that out. We'll talk to you next Friday here on the Strom Sports Show. Have a fantastic weekend.